The Senate will come to order, and the Reverend Gock will lead us in a prayer.
From the second chapter of Proverbs we hear, "For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth comes knowledge and understanding." Gracious God, we begin the first day of this session and recognize there is much ahead of us that will demand openness for learning about the challenges that are coming and the remedies that are called forth from us. So grant us a willingness to open ourselves to your wisdom and perceive the many ways your wisdom will lead us along the right path that will benefit your people. In your holy name we pray, amen.
And when everyone in the chamber and the upper galleries, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Senator from Cole, purpose you rise.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would request unanimous consent of the body to grant a law enforcement official to enter the chamber with a sidearm.
Hearing no objection, that official will be allowed in the chamber.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, for the benefit of the body, reporters from I'll skip that one for now, Mr. President. Justin Rosenbaum from St. Louis Public Radio, Kyle Oster from KMIZ-TV, Julie Smith from the Jefferson City News Tribune, Kermit Miller from KRCG-TV, and Olivia Liu from the Missourian have been granted permission to take photos or videos in the Senate chamber today.
Thank you, Senator. Senator from Cole.
Mr. President, would you inquire of the Secretary if there are messages from the Secretary of the State, and if so, would you please have them read?
There are messages from the Secretary of the State. Madam Secretary, would you please read the messages from the Secretary of the State?
To the Honorable Senate of the 99th General Assembly, second regular session of the State of Missouri. In compliance with Section 115.525, Revised Statutes of Missouri, I have the honor to lay before you herewith a list of the names of the members of the Senate for the 99th General Assembly, second regular session of the State of Missouri, elected at the November 4, 2014 general election and the November 8, 2016 general election. In testimony whereof I hereunto set my hand and affix the official seal of my office this third day of January 2018, John R. Ashcroft, Secretary of State. Missouri State Senators elected November 8, 2016. District 1st, Scott Sifton. 3rd, Gary Romine. 5th, Jamila Nasheed. 7th, Jason Holzman. 9th, Shalon Kiki Curls. 11th, John Joseph Rizzo. 13th, Gina Walsh. 15th, Andrew Koenig. 17th, Ryan Sylvie. 19th, Caleb Rowden. 21st, Denny Hoskins. 23rd, Bill Eigel. 25th, Doug Leibla. 27th, Wayne Wallingford. 29th, David Sater. 31st, Ed Emery. 33rd, Mike Cunningham. Missouri State Senators elected November 4th, 2014. District 2nd, name, Bob Onder. 4th, Jacob W. Hummel. 6th, Mike Kehoe. 8th, Mike Searpoy. 10th, Jeannie Riddle. 12th, Dan Hageman. 14th, Marie N. Chappelle Nadal. 16th, Dan Brown. 18th, Brian Munslinger. 20th, Jay Wasson. 22nd, Paul Whelan. 24th, Jill Shoup. 26th, Dave Schatz. 28th, Sandy Crawford. 30th, Bob Dixon. 32nd, Ron Richard. 34th, Rob Schaff. To the Secretary of the Senate, Honorable Adrian D. Krause, Jefferson City, Missouri. Madam, I, John R. Ashcroft, Secretary of the State of the State of Missouri, hereby certify that at the special election held in the 8th Senatorial District in the State of Missouri on the 7th day of November 2017, as provided by law, the following named person was elected to the office of State Senator, 8th Senatorial District, as shown by the election results certified to this office by the election authorities of the 8th Senatorial District. Name, Mike Searpoy. Office, State Senate, 8th Senatorial District. In witness whereof, I have hereunto set my hand and affixed the seal of my office this 28th day of November 2017. J.R. Ashcroft, Secretary of State.
Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. At this time, I would ask the senator from the 7th to escort the newly elected senator from the 8th to the dais for the oath of office to be administered by the Honorable Zell M. Fisher.
Mr. Searpoy, please raise your right hand and be sworn. I do solemnly swear and affirm that I will support the Constitution of the United States of America.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States of America.
And the Constitution of the State of Missouri.
And the Constitution of the State of Missouri.
I will faithfully perform the duties of my office.
I will faithfully perform the duties of my office.
And that I will not knowingly receive.
I will not knowingly receive.
Directly or indirectly.
Directly or indirectly.
Any
money or valuable thing
for the performance or non-performance
of
any act or duty pertaining to my office other than compensation allowed by law Congratulations, you're Missouri's newest state senator.
Thank you very much.
Madam Secretary, please call the roll of the Missouri Senate.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Searpoy, Crawford, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Leibler, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schaff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
A quorum being established, the second regular session of the 99th General Assembly is convened. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of resolutions.
Senator from Cole. Hearing no objections, Senate will go to the order of business of resolutions. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have two resolutions. I am sending the first one forward, and I ask that it be read.
Madam Secretary, please read the first resolution.
Senate Resolution Number 1043. Be it resolved by the Senate of the 99th General Assembly of the State of Missouri, second regular session, that the rules adopted by the 99th General Assembly, first regular session, as amended, insofar as they are applicable, be adopted as the temporary rules for the control of the deliberations of the Senate of the 99th General Assembly, second regular session, until permanent rules are adopted.
Senator from Cole.
Mr. President, I would move the resolution be adopted.
Those in favor of Senate Resolution 1043. Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from the 8th.
Senator from the 8th, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from Buchanan?
Sure.
Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Who's talking? Thank you, Senator. I just wanted, as the senior senator, I wanted to be the first to congratulate you as the junior senator and welcome you to the Senate.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
I hope you enjoy it as much as I have enjoyed it.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, you yield to the senator from Buchanan.
I do.
Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you for taking my inquiry, Senator. You know, I've been reading in the media many, many articles that have been talking about what can be expected during this session. And this being my 16th session and my last session, don't applaud. I have to tell you that there are many things that have occurred over these years that I'm very disappointed that we did. Last year, 2017, the one thing that really bothers me that we did was we passed the collateral source rule. And I was intending to inquire of the senator from the first, but I didn't get an opportunity. So I would like to discuss with you just briefly the collateral source rule.
Sure.
You know what I'm talking about.
I do.
So the collateral source rule has some implications that are very, very bad. Let's just say that you have two people riding in the back seat of the same car. They get hit in the same accident. One of them, let's say, has health insurance, and the other one doesn't. Let's just say that they sustain the same injury, are taken by the same ambulance to the same hospital, receive the exact same treatment for the same injury. Let's just say it's broken hip. Let's just say that their gross charges are exactly the same in every possible way. They receive the same operation, the same medications, they're in there for the same exact amount of time, but one of them has health insurance and the other doesn't. Now, under that scenario, is it not true that under the collateral source rule, the one who doesn't have insurance would be allowed to tell the jury when they go to sue the person who is at fault that their charges were the full amount of the gross charges? Let's just say it was $100,000, whereas the person who has insurance would only be able to tell the jury that the damages were $30,000, which let's just say that that's what the hospital agreed to accept. That's a fair representation of the collateral source rule, isn't it?
It is, and it seems like it's a disincentive to buy insurance, which is not what we want to do.
No, but it's unjust. Because,
it is unjust.
Right. Because in the end, and there is absolutely no disagreement among the legal minds that I've talked to, in the end, the person who does not have insurance is going to walk away with a check for their pain and suffering on the order of $100,000. Whereas the person who has insurance is going to walk away with a check on the order of $30,000. That's wrong. And we passed that right here in this chamber.
We did.
Although I did talk for 6 hours about it. You know, what else it does is that it discriminates against people on Medicaid. Because people on Medicaid have insurance. And the low payment that they put out is going to reduce the amount of their settlement. And it discriminates against the disabled because they have Medicare. Same thing. The payment for Medicare may be 60% of that for private insurance. And it discriminates against the elderly, you know, because they also have Medicare. And it's a bad policy for Missouri. You know?
I do. And one of several things that we've done that really undermine the ability of people who are seeking damages or who have been injured in the case that you described so well to really make the comparison, but in other kinds of cases, and even about whether they're allowed to go to court or end up having to go through some other means in order to seek the damages they deserve.
Right. Now, arbitration is
what I was trying to come up with. Yes.
Now, another bill that we passed this last year has a provision that says that if you're injured on the job and a blood test done within 24 hours shows that you were under the effect of a drug that was not legally prescribed to you, well, then there's a rebuttable presumption that you had the drug in your system at the time of the injury. Is that not the case?
Right.
Well, let's just take the case of a person who's working at the job, sprains their ankle, goes home, in the middle of the night, the pain crescendos, and they take one of their spouse's, you know, narcotic pills that that person was given for, say, an infected tooth or something like that. Basically what we've done is we've made it so that this person is going to be severely damaged and disadvantaged for a law that basically is a sort of an ex post facto in a way. You're found guilty for something that you didn't do. That's wrong. And we shouldn't have passed it. I don't know if you agree with me.
Well, I think that we have to be very careful when people choose to take other people's medications. I think that there are other laws that we passed last year in relation to tort reform, to changing how the court works for the people of the state of Missouri, that I find even more egregious.
I agree with you. Now, I guess what I'm trying to say here for the people who are listening and for the media who are listening is that I feel a certain sense of responsibility for having let this pass, especially the collateral source one. And this being my last session, I'm not of a mind to just sit down so easily. You know, I'm not. I don't want these bad things to pass. And I'm just basically saying publicly that it won't be so easy to get this stuff past me. And
well,
I don't know, do you feel the same?
Well, I'm very hopeful that you and I feel the same about what is the bad stuff and what is public policy that might actually help the people of the state of Missouri. But as long as we're in alignment, you know what? I will always stand up in support or in opposition to those issues that are going to impact my constituents and the people of the state of Missouri positively or negatively. And I will always offer my voice, and sometimes for a longer period of time than others.
Well, thank you for the inquiry. I really appreciate it. Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
Inquire of the Senator from St. Francois.
Senator from St. Francois, do you yield to the inquiry of the Senator from Buchanan?
Yes, I do.
Senator, you may proceed.
Senator, thank you for taking my inquiry.
Sure.
You know that I've had a lot of people commenting to me on the appointments to the State Board of Education. And I've thought that you and I should talk about that a little bit.
Well, I've spent several weeks voicing my concerns over the travesty of losing our commissioner as we did. But what was more concerning is the process in which it took to take 10 appointees until the governor was finally able to find five that would vote the way he wanted them to vote. To me, that is just a total reckless abandon of what the system should be about.
Well, you know, there are really two elements of the Missouri Constitution that require independent boards, as best as I know. One of them is the Department of Transportation, and then the other one is the Board of Education. They're specifically outlined in the Constitution that they're to be independent. And it seems to me that the hiring and firing of the education commissioner is something that ought to be done after great deliberation, and the board should talk about it at length.
I agree, and that's the reason why I introduced Senate Bill 794 this year, in that just because somebody was not willing to vote the way the governor wanted them to vote should not be a reason for the governor to withdraw their appointment or force them to resign, which we've seen happen several times over the last few weeks. And I hope that the body will take strong consideration of this legislation, that we protect the process, that these people appointing to these boards should have the ability to be free thinkers, be able to make decisions based upon the merits of the issue, not based upon the pressure of the one that appointed them to that position.
You know, it sounds to me like what you're talking about is good policy for the state of Missouri.
Absolutely. We want to protect the state and make it as balanced as possible of power so that folks can make true decisions about what is in the best interest of the state, not an individual.
Now, isn't it the case that Vandeven was doing the will of the Board of Education?
I thought she was doing an exceptionally good job. You know, what was real frustrating was to justify their decision on removing her from position with statistics from 2015. She started her tenure as commissioner January of 2015. Those numbers, that data they tried to use to justify their decision was based upon the prior commissioner's tenure, not hers. Very frustrating when we try to use false information to justify decisions like that.
Well, when you have a governor who in advance discusses with nominees what the governor wants the nominee to do, because that had to happen. I mean, come on. That had to happen. Then you have the possibility of the balance of power that's outlined in the Constitution to being thwarted. And we really shouldn't have that. And I'm not pleased with what happened. And
do you realize that one of the appointees was kept secret until just minutes before that final board meeting took place? They were sworn in and took a vote to remove the commissioner. That person had just minutes of being on the board before they made a decision of this magnitude, which is just a blatant disregard for consideration of the facts.
Right. And so I guess what I've said, and I think that you've said the same thing, is that these nominees, I will be opposing them to the fullest extent of my ability. And I think that's a pretty good extent. And with you also feeling the same way, probably the chance of them being confirmed is near zero. if Lemon, not zero.
I mean, anyone that's willing to make a decision of this magnitude, as I've said, without being fully informed, does not deserve to be serving on the State Board of Education.
Absolutely, and there's no possible way they could be fully informed without some debate at the committee level. I mean, they should have been on the board talking about this before they went to fire the commissioner that all the other board members were happy with.
Correct, and they had worked with her. The three that were still on board that had worked with her had valid reasons of success to show the others if they would have taken the time to listen, but they did not.
You know that the president of the board is the former senator from the 34th, Charlie Shields.
Yes, sir.
Who I sat by in gubernatorial appointments committee to get him onto the board years ago. And I was proud to do that. And I feel like the way that these members go to the board meeting, make a motion, and get rid of Vandeven thwarted his ability to speak and to talk about the issue with them.
No, I agree.
Well, I guess here's the thing. The governor has withdrawn their appointments.
Right.
Because we have 30 days. If he had left their appointments to the Senate, we would have 30 days to, make a decision on whether to confirm or not. And if we didn't do it within 30 days, unless we sent the appointments back to the governor, these appointees would be forever barred from serving. Is that not true?
This is true. And right now, they, as you stated, just as the thing's probably not dried on the letter yet, but their names have been withdrawn from consideration. But my understanding is that they're going to get reappointed again, allow the Senate time to deliberate and discuss. But I think the egregious nature in which they went about their business, again, the governor should be inclined to find a new five to appoint.
Okay, now, the way this would work, Senator, is that if the governor renominates them this afternoon, then if we don't act to confirm them, we would have to send those appointments back before the end of session in order that they would then be allowed to be reappointed after the session.
Right.
And the governor could do that if we send them back. Is it not the case that if we do send them back to the governor and say, we're not confirming them, the governor, the day after session, could make interim appointments of them again, and then they could serve on the board. And I have to tell you that that would not be an acceptable outcome. So I myself would see it as important that should there be a motion to send them back to the governor, I would filibuster that.
I would agree with you. I think I would support that as well, because I think these names just need to be totally removed from any opportunity to serve.
Now, at that point, then it would simply be a matter of, do we PQ that particular motion, or, you know, how long would we have to go? And I have to tell you, between you and others, we could go a long time, a very, very long time, an infinite amount of time. The bottom line of it is that I am here, right now, advising the governor not to submit those names back to us today. Don't do that,
Governor. I agree with you,
Governor.
And I support you on that. I think that it's important that we call out with corruption, we call out any activity that is deemed to be inappropriate to serve in our state. And I think the actions of these five board members is deemed inappropriate, and we need to do whatever we can to stand for the values of Missouri, to stand for the values of the Senate being part of the process, to make sure that these folks do not have a chance to serve on the State Board of Education.
Well, I have to thank the governor for withdrawing the names. I think that was the wise thing for him to do. But I will tell you that if he resubmits those names to the Senate, there is a great big chance, knowing this up front, that those people will be forever barred from serving. And if he wants to do that to them, he can do that, but that will be on him, not on us. Because we can't be having the situation where the governor withdraws people, waits until the end of session every year, and then puts these same people back in. Because you know why? You know why that's so critical? Because we've already learned that interim appointments serve only at the pleasure of the governor.
Right.
And if they do a single act that he doesn't like, he just withdraws them. I mean, think about that. If we confirm people, they are not subject to just being fired by the governor. Like, I don't like it that you did X on any board or commission. No. No, we can't be having the governor say, well, I don't like it that you did that. You're fired. I'm going to talk to someone else who will do my bidding and put them in. Because the independence of every single board is at stake here.
Well, and the governor activity and the media has covered it. I mean, it's so obvious that that is what's transpired with the State Board of Education. We have other boards that we're going to be discussing as well that similar activities have been taken. The propensity for the governor to do this has to be challenged and has to be stopped. It is not the appropriate way to handle the decisions of this state.
I agree. So I guess what you're joining me right here, right now, encouraging the governor not to re-nominate these people to that board, are you?
I am joining you in that, and I'm agreeing with you that we will make the stand to make sure that we do our part to make sure those folks aren't confirmed.
We can't allow that those nominations to go back to the governor. Because if we do, every time the Board of Education does something that the governor doesn't like, he'll just fire one of those people and replace them during the next interim. We can't be having that.
And that's a valid concern because he has shown that that's what he will do by taking 5 of the 10 that was selected and removing them to replace them. The pattern has been shown. You can't deny the pattern that has taken place over the last several months.
It's absolutely clear. Senator, I thank you for taking the inquiry. Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
I'd like to inquire of the Senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from Buchanan.
I am.
Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I didn't warn you that I was going to inquire of you, but I apologize for that. But I also want to thank you for taking my inquiry.
Yep.
Something landmark happened this last session. And the landmark thing that happened was that the House took action on the grape growers tax credit. Are you familiar with that, what they did there?
I am familiar with the grape growers tax credit. I'm not familiar what you're speaking right now.
Well, you know, there's a provision in the statute that says that either the House Budget Committee or the Senate Appropriations Committee can vote down tax credits and they go away. I mean, they're just not authorized for that year. And the House actually used that provision in the law to eliminate tax credits for the grape growers.
Yeah, I don't know how significant that tax credit is. I have a lot of grape growers in my district, and I've not heard any big complaints from them.
Well, you know, I agree with you that it isn't about the significance of the tax credit itself. It's about the significance of how the House did it,
right,
and what the House actually did. They used this provision to eliminate a tax credit. And what it means is that if they can do that, well, then you, being the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, could limit tax credits across the board by following their lead. They've set a precedent. And I didn't know if you were aware of that.
I was not.
What did you think of the way that the governor handled the Missouri Housing Development tax credit, the low-income housing one?
It was a bit unusual, maybe done more quickly than we would have expected, but I think it's something that we as legislators have for a long time thought we should reduce it. maybe not just completely end it.
Well, I think that we should probably reduce it, but what he did with that Missouri Housing Development Corporation was very similar to what he did with the Education Commission. You know, he just stacked it with people on the board and then just said, hey, we're going to get rid of that. And basically when he did that, there were a lot of people that were expecting to use those tax credits, which we as a legislature authorized, and now they don't get to do it just because of the one person, the governor. And that just doesn't seem like the way we ought to be doing business. And I didn't know if you agree or...
Well, it is concerning. I think all governors do things similar, but probably a little more quietly, so to speak, maybe. I don't know. All governors have things that I think is important to them that they want to get done. And where you do it quickly like this or slowly, I guess, is dependent upon the individual.
Well, you know, I've been called a wild card by the governor. And it seems to me that when you do those kinds of things, then you're kind of a wild card. You can never know what the governor is going to be doing because he'll do things in these manner. He's not transparent about it. And I just find it kind of disconcerting. I thank you for taking my inquiry. Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
To please inquire of the senator from Butler. It's not in the room, but I do need to.
Senator from Butler. Senator from Butler. Sergeant Arms, would you please summons the senator from Butler?
Mr. President, just to
Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
If I could postpone that for a moment and inquire the senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, do you yield to an inquiry from Senator from Buchanan?
I do, the other senator is making his way to the chamber.
Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Yep. Thank you, Senator. Did you have some comments to make?
Yeah, you know, on the low-income housing tax credit, a couple things I wanted to point out that I've learned over the years. There's only two states in the United States that match dollar for dollar the federal Section 8 low-income housing, and that is Missouri and Georgia. And most states match about 50% of the federal low-income housing tax credit, and we're at 100%. And then at one time in Missouri, we were able to stack a lot of these tax credits, brownfield remediation, historical tax credits. And so some of these guys were building low-income housing and receiving tremendous amounts of money from tax credits that were paying for each individual unit about five times. So it's always been a concern to me. It's one of the tax credits that seems to generate little or no income, about 17 cents per dollar we invest. That concerns me a little bit. Yet, I guess you can look at it somewhat as a benevolent tax credit as well, and that you're creating affordable housing for low income. But it just seems odd to me that Missouri, not being that wealthy, are still matching dollar for dollar the federal low income housing tax credit. And Georgia's doing the same thing. We probably ought to be more at 50%, and that might put us a little more in line.
Well, but, Senator, have you heard any talk about creating a tax credit such as the one that Kansas has, where it's kind of a closing fund, or have you heard any talk about the governor wishing to take the savings from the low-income housing tax credit and put it into some kind of a fund that then the governor would use to close deals to bring businesses to Missouri? Have you heard that?
I have not heard that.
Oh, I've heard that. And The theme of my inquiring right now is to kind of let people know, you know, what they can expect from this session. And I just have to say that if the governor tries to create a slush fund for closing deals by getting rid of the low-income housing tax credit, that's going to meet with some resistance.
Yeah, that would not be good. We had some of those things happen when the former governor bought the airplane from a fund that we as appropriators were not aware of in the Highway Patrol budget. It seems like we're always finding these funds that we don't necessarily appropriate. And it's always been a concern to me on all tax credits that they're not very much purviewed by the Appropriations Committee. They're kind of taken off the top, and that I think gets us in trouble. So it'll be interesting to see what the plan is here. I hope it's not what you're outlining. That would be disappointing and I think inappropriate.
Okay. Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
If I could inquire of the senator from Clay.
Senator from Clay, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from Buchanan?
Do.
You may proceed, Senator.
First of all, Senator, congratulations on your PSC appointment.
Thank you,
and
Senator.
Stellar. I'm hoping that we act on that very quickly.
Thank you. I appreciate that. More importantly, do you like my jacket?
I do. It's kind of the Darth Vader look there.
It is. My
very
wife
glad.
Got this for Christmas. I was very excited to wear it today.
So, Senator, you and I have been on the same side of trying to pass certain ethics reforms, and we're concerned about dark money and the effect of dark money on politics. Isn't that correct?
Sure.
You and I have been proponents of limiting the usage of dark money.
Right.
And we see that here in Missouri. I don't remember if you were a target of the governor's secret dark money committee, like I was, where they put my telephone number on the internet, remember?
Sure. Sure. So if you remember, the ad against you was actually published. The ad against me and several of our colleagues was shown to us by the press, but never actually published.
Oh, was it ever put on social media, published on social media?
I don't think it was. I think you were the only recipient of the actual publicity of the ad.
There is an initiative petition called Clean Missouri that would take a large step toward ethics reform, and I think that the next step would be to eliminate dark money. I believe that the people of Missouri will ultimately eliminate dark money. What do you think?
I would hope that they do at some point, and I don't know if Clean Missouri Initiative is the way to do it or not, but I think certainly politics would be better off and more transparent for the people if we could see who was funding the various messages that are being put out there in campaigns and for and against particular members of the legislature and other offices.
Right. You know, I just wanted to talk to you briefly about one of the things that the governor said in his State of the State address. He said he was talking to the legislature, he said, "Many of you have been good keepers of the public trust. Your families have sacrificed, though you can serve the people, and I appreciate you and your families. But too many good, strong public servants have come here only to see the will of the people obstructed and corrupted by insiders and lobbyists." And then he went on to say that last week I signed an executive order banning gifts from lobbyists to state employees of the executive branch. And, you know, my understanding is that the governor's office won't even talk to lobbyists. I mean, it's very difficult for a lobbyist to get in there. But one of the things that kind of brings to my mind is, what's the difference really between a gift to the governor and, say, a contribution of $850,000 by Centene to a new Missouri? I mean, what's the real difference? I mean, he's not going to let anybody take gifts, But he'll take $850,000 from Centene. And by the way, that number was given to me on good authority, although there is no way for us to know for sure whether Centene really did give a new Missouri $850,000.
Sure. Well, and that's the issue, not just with dark money. I mean, that's the issue with our entire campaign finance system in general. I mean, you can never really separate those two. And I think that's been an argument that we've had on this floor before, back when we had unlimited contributions and we were talking about how it's silly to rail against, pizza in the hallways, but at the same time, you know, members of the legislature, it's not just restricted to the governor in that instance, are taking large contributions as well. So
being that Centene was given the Medicaid managed care contract for Missouri, and it wouldn't have even been expanded had not the governor pushed for expansion of managed care. And it doesn't matter to me which side of that issue you were on, but the point of it is that...
Specifically, though, I seem to remember the previous chairman of appropriations is the one who set the expansion of managed care in motion.
Right, and it was really his chief of staff.
That was prior to this governor getting elected.
It was really his chief of staff that pushed for that. And by the way, his chief of staff now has a job working with the Managed Care Association. Oh, and did you know that David Willis, do you know who David Willis is?
I do.
He was the person on the House side who worked for Richardson, who pushed for managed care expansion. He now also has a job working for the Managed Care Association. Did you know that?
I actually didn't know where he had landed. I knew he was leaving the Speaker's office.
But I just have to ask this question. If the governor took $850,000 for a new Missouri and, you know, acted in his official capacity to help Centene get more business, what's the difference between that contribution to his secret dark money committee and an actual bribe? Like, what's the difference, really?
Legality, I suppose.
The legality of it. Right. It's just that one's legal. And we, the people of Missouri, can't really know because he won't tell us. Like he, by the way, said that he would tell all of his donors. He flip-flopped on that and didn't. Just kind of like he said that he didn't use the what was it, the donor list from his organization, The Mission Continues, but it turns out that he did. But anyway, one thing that I found out, being that I'm on the MoHealthNet Oversight Committee, is that, you know, when people sign up for Medicaid, they have to be assigned to one of the three companies that that provide care under managed care. So there are three of them. So when a person comes along and they don't choose Aetna or whatever the companies are, I don't even remember which ones they are, except I know Centene is one of them.
Hey, real quick rabbit trail. I seem to remember during appropriations last year, you asking for the network sustainability study for those three. Remember that needed to be done before the contracts were awarded?
Right.
If you never received those, I did last week and would be happy to give them to you because we had to ask multiple times.
They actually did them finally after the care was started.
But I never saw them until last week, so I'm just, right. I have them if you would like them.
But here's the thing. So let's just say that a person who hasn't been assigned to one of these three companies, let's just say that they have to have a process for being auto-assigned. So you could think about how would be a fair way of doing that. There's three different companies. The first one would go to company A, the second one would go to company B, the third one would go to company C, right? Doesn't that seem kind of like it would be fair? Yeah, well, that's not how it's done. How it's done is they all go to the one with the lowest membership, which happens to be Centene in most areas. Hmm. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting. I was unaware of that process.
Yeah. So anyway, when the people of Missouri see, you know, contributions of $850,000 going to a new Missouri, then they probably, you know, are scratching their heads going like, is that really proper and good? And I mean, is it a good policy for Missouri? Or maybe I'm just a malcontent. Maybe I'm just a malcontent and the governor's going to roll all over me. I don't know. That bothers me. So thank you for the inquiry, Senator. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Senator.
President.
Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from the second.
Senator from the second. Senator from the second, you yield to inquire from the senator from Buchanan.
I do.
Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Senator, thank you for taking my inquiry. Basically, the theme of my inquiry right now is kind of what to look out for in the coming session and
sure.
Where I am and basically where maybe some other senators are.
Sure.
One of the things that I've been reading about is that there's going to be another push to pass the Missouri Merchandising Practices Act. Now, in the governor's State of the State report, or, you know, to the General Assembly, State of the State address, he said, a report released about a month ago looked at every state, every city, and every county in the United States, and that report named St. Louis, Missouri, the worst judicial hellhole in America. This isn't a pretty picture. Here's what's happening. Out-of-state lawyers are suing businesses on behalf of out-of-state clients in Missouri's courts. And then he went on to say, we need to change our joinder and venue rules to end these out-of-state lawsuits. And we must end individual lawsuits by reforming the Missouri Merchandising Practices Act. Well, the other lawyer in the chamber left early. He had to go to work, and so you're the lawyer.
Sure.
Now, is it not true, Senator, that it is against the Constitution to pass ex post facto laws?
That would be true.
Generally true. But is it also not true that there is a loophole? And the loophole is that we can pass laws that change court procedure and have them affect existing cases.
I believe that is true.
And is it not also true that previous efforts to change the Missouri Merchandising Practices Act and the joinder rules would affect existing cases? In fact, I believe that there were 43 lawsuits pending regarding asbestos that had to do with Mr. David Humphreys, who owns the Tamco Shingles Company, right?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure that.
But there were a bunch of them, and I think you're aware of them.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Of course, sometimes asbestos is federal, but certainly asbestos cases have been litigated under the Merchandising Practices Act.
Well, the thing is that one of the things that I'm so proud of our country for is our court system. More than any other country in the world, the people of the United States of America enjoy the ability to go to court to redress their grievances. And that is a right that sets us heads and tails above other countries. Do you not agree?
Well, that is true.
And I would think that somebody who fought for our nation would consider protecting that right above many others. I mean, we must protect our judicial system. And if somebody wrongs me or my family, I want to be able to go to court. But the problem is, it costs too much to hire a lawyer on my own. Does it not? Is it not beyond the ability of many people? So what we here in America enjoy is the ability to have our cases sort of herded together into a class action suit or joined. You can have them joined under the joinder rules. And that way, a person who doesn't have very much income can afford to go to court and have their case heard, especially if the damages aren't very much.
Yeah, that's usually the justification for class action lawsuits. Joinder, you need a cause of action arising out of the same transaction and occurrence, but a similar concept.
Right. And I guess that if you are the maker of shingles and you've had some bad batches of shingles, the Methodist Church's shingles didn't last very long, then what you would do if you're a billionaire is you would make contributions to people, to members of the General Assembly, to get them to see your way. And you might even make $1 million contribution to the governor for his election, which David Humphreys made to the governor. And then you might say in your State of the State speech, just a little while later, that we have to end these frivolous lawsuits by the Missouri Merchandising Practices Act. Well, I have to tell you, everybody else's lawsuit is frivolous, but not yours. And the people of Missouri need to be listening right now. I'm going to do everything that I can do to protect these Joinder rules and the Missouri Merchandising Practices Act. It's one of the things that makes Missouri great, and it's good public policy to have that available to us. You know, recently there was a prominent Missouri political operative fined by the Federal Elections Commission. His name is James Thomas III. You familiar with them?
I don't know Mr. Thomas.
No, but Mr. Thomas is the treasurer, it's reported here in the Springfield Newsleader, that he was the treasurer for eight different committees, eight different Missouri PACs, and one candidate committee. And it says one of these committees is the Committee for Accountable Government, which is funded by Joplin Roofing Magnate and right-to-work lawbacker David Humphreys. Well, apparently there was some monkey business going on, and they got caught. They were violating the federal rules. It's also true that he is the treasurer for a thing called Now or Never. And it appears that Now or Never... there is this thing called the Missourians for Worker Freedom, which is yet another PAC for which Thomas is the treasurer. And that it looks like the Greitens Secret Dark Money Committee gave them $250,000. So there is this kind of web network going on here. And he was also the treasurer for the Missouri Alliance for Freedom. And does that name ring a bell? They're the group that sued me over dark money. I know you're a proponent of dark money. I'm an opponent. But they sued me, and they asked me for all my emails, which would have been to and from national groups that support getting rid of dark money, like represent.us and different ones. And so, anyway, the Missouri Alliance for Freedom received $100,000 from this other PAC that received $100,000 from Humphreys. So there is this connection between Humphreys and Greitens and the Missouri Alliance for Freedom, which is suing me, and which lawsuit is still ongoing, and they want all of my secret dark money texts and emails, regarding my opposition of secret dark money. Well, you know, the thing is that I just want to say to the people of Missouri, I'm watching, and I hope that the media are watching, and you can expect me to continue to watch and report on this floor during this coming session the kind of corruption that I see happening. I will be talking about it. I'm a wild card. I'm a malcontent. I don't know if you noticed, Senator, but I didn't introduce any bills this year. You know, why should I introduce any bills? My bills never get passed. I introduced Senate Bill 1 this last year and Senate Amendment 1, I mean the Senate Joint Resolution 1.
Right.
Do they go anywhere? No. Talk about, and I was fighting dark money.
Now, Senator, if I could just correct one thing. You accused me of supporting dark money. And, of course, I opposed an amendment to a bill that you introduced last year, because I do not believe that nonprofits like Missouri Right to Life or National Rifle Association, or for that matter on the left, the Sierra Club or Planned Parenthood or the ACLU, should be required to disclose their
donors.
Then
work with me, Senator, and let's find a way to stop this dark money, such as the one that Greitens is using against us, to try to, force his version of what's good for Missouri down the throats of Missourians. Let's work together and find a way to exclude those. I commit to you that I will work with you on that, if you will.
I think you're saying there's a special case where a nonprofit seems to appear to be an arm of a campaign, and I could see where you could view that as a separate case. Because since last session adjourned, there have been cases where this isn't only protecting privacy is not only important to conservative groups like pro-life groups or Second Amendment groups, but in New York and in California, the ACLU has had its donors targeted by hate groups, by neo-Nazi type groups, and their donors have been harassed. So I think privacy is very important. Openness, transparency is something the government owns us. We as individuals should be able to support groups that follow our beliefs without fear of harassment or intimidation.
Thank you for the inquiry, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
I see that the Senator of Butler has made it back, and I would like to inquire of him briefly.
Senator from Butler, you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. President, I do.
Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Senator, I'm just curious, is there an iron smelter in your district there operating as a result of the first extraordinary session that we endured?
From my understanding, there's not.
Wow. So we all came down, we had this extraordinary session, we spent state resources to do this, and there was never any ironclad commitment to move forward with that, was there?
Not that I was aware of, that's correct.
As I recall, we weren't even allowed to know the name of the company that was supposedly coming.
That's correct. I think it leaked out there in the last week or two.
Yeah, I know, but did the state ever actually release it and make it public? To your knowledge?
I don't recall that happening, no.
I don't either. Basically what we had here was a special interest who came to the legislature to receive a special law to try to get that special interest the ability to compete in the marketplace. We see this all the time. You agree?
That's correct. That's a long discussion, but at any rate, they already had that ability in the first place to have petitioned the PSC in the first place for a lower economic development rate. So.
Right. Well, I guess what I'm saying to the people of Missouri and the media present is, I'm going to be looking very closely as we go, looking at the times when special interests come to the legislature and ask us to help them improve their chances of success in the marketplace against their competitors. Because, after all, everybody else in the district has to pay a certain rate. What we were doing there was giving a new smelter a better rate than anybody else would have to pay. And I just think that that's the wrong thing to do.
Well, originally one of the big problems, the original legislation or amendment come over got hijacked with a couple other amendments on there that was going to change the rulemaking of the Public Service Commission, you may remember.
Well, I guess, the theme of my inquiries today has been you know, what you can expect out of this session. This is my last session, so I'm just letting everybody know kind of how I'm thinking about this last session. And I think you might have read a quote from me in the St. Louis paper that said something about, there are so many things that I would stop. Well, there are. There are, and we've talked about some of them today. And so, Senator, I'm wrapping up my inquiry with the inquiry with you, and I want to thank you so much for taking
the inquiry. Well, just so you know, I am unhappy that we don't have the jobs yet down in Southeast Missouri, though.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
We are on Senate Resolution 1043. Does any senator desire to be heard? Seeing none. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
You've heard the motion made by the Senator from Cole. Those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The resolution is adopted. Senator from Cole.
I have my second resolution. I am sending it forward. I'd ask the Secretary to read it, and I am moving for its adoption.
Madam Secretary, please read the resolution.
Senate Resolution Number 1044, be it resolved by the Senate that the Secretary of the Senate inform the House of Representatives that the Senate of the second regular session of the 99th General Assembly is duly convened and is now in session and ready for consideration of business.
Does any senator desire to be heard on Resolution 1044? Does any senator desire to be heard on Senate Resolution 1044? Hearing none, Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. I renew my motion.
You heard the motion made by the Senator from Cole. Those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The resolution is adopted. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. In accordance with Section 9.141 of the Revised Statutes of Missouri, will you please have the Bill of Rights read?
Madam Secretary, please read the Bill of Rights.
Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Amendment 2, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Amendment 3, no soldier shall in time of peace be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Amendment 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Amendment 5, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment of indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Amendment 7. In suits at common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Amendment 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel or unusual punishments inflicted. Amendment 9. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage other retained by the people. Amendment 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people.
You've heard the Bill of Rights. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of introduction of guests.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of introduction of guests. Introduction of guest. Introduction of guest. Seeing none, Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you inquire from the Secretary if there are messages from the House? If so, would you ask them to please be read?
There are messages from the House. Madam Secretary, please read the messages.
Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and adopted House Resolution 4828. Also, Mr. President, House of Resolution number 4828, be it resolved that the Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives of the 99th General Assembly, second regular session, informs the Senate that the House of Representatives is duly convened and is now in session ready for consideration of business. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and adopted House Resolution 4829. House Resolution number 4829, be it resolved that a message be sent to the Governor of the State of Missouri to inform His Excellency that the House of Representatives of the 99th General Assembly, second regular session of the State of Missouri, is now regularly organized and ready for business, and to receive any message or communication that His Excellency may desire to submit, and that the Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives be directed to inform the Senate that the adoption of this resolution. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and adopted House Concurrent Resolution 50, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Also, Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and adopted House Concurrent Resolution 51, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Respectfully submitted, Daniel Adam Crumless, Chief Clerk.
Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you inquire from the Secretary if there are messages from the Governor? If so, they be printed in the journal.
There are messages from the Governor. They will be printed in the journal. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements, and I'd ask you to recognize me for an announcement. Mr. President, if you don't mind, would you recognize the Senator from Newton?
Senator from Newton, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Please refer the gubernatorial appointments to the Committee on Gubernatorial Appointments.
Gubernatorial appointments will be appointed to the committee. Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. What of our order of business are we on?
You're getting ready to state that order of business.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, we will go back to the order of business of announcements. I'd ask you to recognize me for an announcement.
The order of business will be announcements. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. For the benefit of the body, I will plan on recessing approximately till 14:30 this afternoon in a few minutes. I think there's food for the Senate members and their staff, and we would love to have them join us in the pro tem's office. After recess, we will read in the pre-filed bills. We'll also take in new bills and concurrent resolutions and a few other housekeeping matters. So for the benefit of the body, that's what we'll do when we come back at 14:30.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will stand in recess till... Oh, I'm sorry. Any other announcements? Any other announcements? Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you rise?
Seeking unanimous consent to introduce a very special guest.
Hearing no objection, Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, to my right and your left, standing on the side over there, as she has often done, back visiting us from England, is my former Chief of Staff, Violet Marcel. Looking wonderful, and we're so delighted to see her and catch up with her. If the body would please join me in making her feel welcome.
Let's please welcome a guest from the Senator from the 24th. Announcements. Announcements. Hearing none, Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the Senate stand in recess until 14:30 this day.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will stand in recess till 14:30 p.m. this day.